Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to God's glory and that of his kingdom. We've been hearing a lot this week from Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. After all, he's the point man for the Biden administration's relentless enabling of millions of illegal aliens to get into our country. Consequently, during congressional testimony this week, he's been something of a human piñata for legislators of both parties whose constituents are increasingly frantic about the damage he's doing to the public health, public safety, and national security. Perhaps with a view to deflecting incoming fire from that quarter, on April 27th, Secretary Mayorkas opened a new and very ominous front in the Marxist revolutionary wrecking operation he and the rest of Team Biden are mounting against America. He announced that his department is establishing an Orwellian Ministry of Truth called the Disinformation Governance Board. It's not hard to connect the dots on how such an effort to restrict speech will fit into the larger program being implemented by those like Barack Obama seeking to fundamentally transform our country. What is being created is nothing less than a digital gulag for restricting our liberties and ultimately turning this freedom-loving constitutional republic into another repressive communist wasteland. For example, the mechanism for enforcing vaccine mandates, heretofore known as vaccine passports and now being marketed as smart health cards, will provide infrastructure for the surveillance, data weaponization, and control mechanisms the Chinese communists call the social credit system. That totalitarian enterprise will be used, among other things, to track and punish those deemed guilty of disinformation thought crimes. If you think this can't happen here, think again. It's happening before our eyes. And if, as Ronald Reagan famously put it, we don't want to be reduced to telling our children and our children's children what it was like to live in the United States when men were free, we must oppose and defeat the Marxists, both foreign and domestic, and their toxic agenda. I want to extend a personal invitation to you to learn more about this digital gulag and what we can do about it at an extremely timely webinar on Monday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Please register to join us at stopvaxpassports.org. To talk about all of this and more, I'm always thrilled to be able to say we are joined by Charles Sam Faddis. He is a member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, a man who served our country with great distinction, both in the uniform of the United States Army and without a uniform, undercover as a Central Intelligence Agency clandestine operative. He has also served in a variety of other capacities, but at the moment, perhaps the most important one is as the driving force behind AndMagazine.com. You can find it at Substack, and I very strongly encourage you to do so. You can also find him here just about every week. Sam Faddis, it's great to have you back. Welcome, sir.
Great to be here, as always, Frank.
You have just published an important essay about all of this. You describe it as "The Bolsheviks Make Their Move" at Substack. Read us in on what your sense is of this so-called Disinformation Governance Board, Sam.
Right. Well, the reference in the article obviously is to the fact that the Bolsheviks did not come to power in Russia as some sort of majority power party. They staged a coup after a popular revolution and basically shoved everybody else out and imposed totalitarian control. And that's exactly what you're seeing here. The Biden administration has no intention of trusting to the forces of democracy and free speech. What they're going to do is control the discourse, and they have actually a vast array of weapons they have deployed here. It's a war on free speech. I mean, the essence of free speech, right, is to say what other people disagree with. You don't need a... It's valueless if all you can say is what the government tells you you can say. That's no longer a right. And so...
Oh, certainly no longer free, that's for sure.
Yeah, and so what we have here is the next move, and something that's been ongoing since Joe sat down in the White House with this new lady, Jankowicz, who's running this entity. And it is explicitly designed to wage war against what they call either misinformation or disinformation, depending on who's talking. And the definition of that is what they disagree with.
So it is essentially a political definition of disinformation, not any objective sense of trying to prevent factually wrong content from being put forward. That's bad enough, honestly, in a free speech environment. But you're saying basically this is just all about partisan politics.
100% blatantly, this is a black and white thing. That is what is happening. And you notice that one of the first things out of Mayorkas's mouth the other day was in sort of tiptoeing around defining this, which they don't really want to do. The first thing out of his mouth is he's talking about election disinformation. Well, this is in the context of what is now in run up to 2022, frankly, an expanded Democratic effort to steal yet another election. And we're serving notice that if you talk about that and try to expose that, you're going to be facing the consequences. We're weaponizing intelligence and law enforcement against you.
Sam, you have been spending a lot of time over the past year and a half or so now, focused like a laser on evidence of electoral fraud in your native Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. You know whereof you speak with respect to the fact that this would not be the first election that would be interfered with in this fashion. And I'm sure that this sharpens greatly your concern about what these guys are up to, if indeed this is just essentially a prelude to trying to ensure that certain things can be said and certain things can't be said, and the people who will determine which is which are partisan political figures like this Nina Jackowicz, who will be apparently running this disinformation governance board. Tell us a little bit more about her background and why this is concerning.
Well, she's just like so many of the folks that are involved in this. She's a Democratic Party hack, and her entire background is promoting, I mean, name a narrative that the Democratic Party has trotted out over the last X number of years, which is designed to, say, attack Trump and the MAGA movement and so forth. She's been...
Well, let's focus on Hunter Biden's laptop just as one example.
Sure. Hunter Biden's laptop is Russian disinformation. It's not real. There's nothing to see here. All day, every day from this lady. Trump is a Russian stooge. Trump is under the control of Moscow. All day, every day from this lady. She's never backed off. She's never acknowledged what anybody with eyes can see now, which is this is all lies. She continues to peddle that. And she says, the other day she tweeted something about how the concept of free speech on Twitter made her shudder.
This is in the context of Elon Musk's efforts to bring it back, now underscoring how much we've lost in that regard. So, Sam, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to get into another of the driving forces behind this agenda of essentially politicizing and weaponizing government control of fundamental freedoms, notably, but not exclusively, freedom of speech, with a fellow by the name of Joshua Geltzer, who you have been doing some serious research into over the past few months, and I think have really exposed as a driving and quite malevolent force behind this kind of agenda that you're talking about. And if, as I said in my opening comments, we don't get this right, we're going to find that we've lost our country. And it will be to people like Jackowicz and Geltzer who have in mind, well, as Barack Obama put it, a fundamentally transformed America, one that is unrecognizable and certainly not the kind of place that we want to bequeath to our children and our grandchildren. We're going to talk about that and much more with the great Sam Faddis on the other side of this very short message. Stay tuned. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The man enabling millions to immigrate here illegally just unveiled another mortal threat to our country. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas announced that his department is establishing an Orwellian Ministry of Truth called the Disinformation Governance Board. It's not hard to connect the dots on how such an effort to restrict speech will tie into the rest of the Marxist revolutionary wrecking operation the Biden administration is mounting. A new digital gulag is being constructed in which vaccine passports repackaged as smart health cards will provide infrastructure for the surveillance, data weaponization, and control mechanisms the Chinese communists call the social credit system. It will be used to track and punish those deemed guilty of disinformation thought crimes. Learn what we can do about this at our digital gulag webinar on Monday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Register at stopvaxpassports.org. This is Frank Gaffney. We're back, and I'm pleased to say we are able to continue this extraordinarily timely conversation with a man who has not only thought deeply about what freedom requires, but he's put his life on the line repeatedly and in some of the most dangerous places on the planet to protect ours. His name is Charles Sam Faddis. You can follow his work at andmagazine.com, Substack, an extraordinarily important resource, as, of course, is its author. Sam, you were laying out for us the predicate, which is that a constitutional republic like ours, predicated on liberty, whose very first amendment to that constitution speaks to the importance of freedom of speech and guarantees it, that's now under assault. There's a fellow that you have profiled at End Magazine and at accountabilityinitiative.org about what he's doing in the White House as a special assistant to the President of the United States. Tell us about this chap, Joshua Geltzer, where he comes from, what he's up to, and its implications for this agenda, among others.
Right. Well, we should keep in mind here in this context, Frank, you know, the truly dangerous people in any kind of Marxist revolution, and that's really what we're looking at, are the intellectuals, the people, so-called intellectuals, the people that provide the intellectual underpinning, the justification. It's not the guys pulling the triggers on the firing squad. It's the guys who actually create the environment in which that can happen. And I know this sounds potentially very inflammatory and extremist, but that's exactly where we are. And Joshua is one of those guys. He is a terrifying individual. He's the special assistant to the president for domestic extremism, I think.
Domestic extremist, I think it's violence is in there somewhere too, but it seems as though he's casting that net more widely than just violence. No?
Exactly. And look, he's been in there since Joe sat down in the Oval Office. He came in and he's the nerve center for this whole thing. And what he says coming out of his mouth is terrifying. You know, what he says is, in effect, to boil it down, words are the equivalent of violence. And you don't have to blow anything up to be a terrorist. You don't even have to be planning to blow anything up to be a terrorist or an extremist. If you hold ideas and espouse them that he considers to have the potential, he doesn't agree with, that has the potential to create violence in his mind, and that's all that matters, what he thinks.
Yeah. And therefore, and that's a pretext for acting against you in some way. And you know, Tucker Carlson, in reporting on this development with this so-called Disinformation Governance Board, made the observation, which I think we all better be focused on, which is this isn't just some independent entity or agency even. This is a feature now of the Department of Homeland Security, in which, as he's observed, you got a lot of people and a lot of ammunition and guns that are, you know, law enforcement who can act on direction from, you know, the Jankowitzes or the Geltzers in the administration when they see fit. And talk a little bit about, Sam, how this is now being put into motion, not just in the Department of Homeland Security, but also in the Defense Department, with predictable and very, very unsettling effects.
Right. So, I mean, the Department of Defense has basically been, as you just indicated, at the forefront of what we're now seeing on a broader governmental basis. They have effectively this guy Garrison now, who is essentially their commissar,
Bishop Garrison. Not a clerical bishop, but that's his first name, and he's running the countering violent extremism program at the Defense Department.
Exactly. And he's been in place now for many, many, many months. And they are actively hunting for political opponents of the president. And they are employing some incredibly sophisticated technical tools. So they have a variety of tools that they use to search the internet, search social media, and then identify you as holding positions that are contrary to the prevailing wisdom. And then you can be eliminated and you can be removed from the Department of Defense. This is not fantasy, and it's not speculation. It is happening right now. In fact, they actually,
men and women in uniform and civilian, employees as well, are all being purged. Is that the right term for it? On the basis of not holding the politically acceptable positions or views. These would be people who are, Trump voters or otherwise simply, critical of an agenda like the one we're talking about?
That is exactly what I'm saying. And it is happening already and it is happening right now. They will also interfere with your social media searches using software and redirect you away from things you were looking for on Google, and feed you directly to sites that push the party narrative. Again, I know that sounds like science fiction, but it's a program called Moonshot. It is in place and it is active. So you think you're trying to find the truth, and what you are being fed is the approved government narrative. This is straight out of 1984, except Orwell probably couldn't imagine the sophistication of some of what's going on.
Yeah, and that brings me back to something we touched on a moment ago. Sam, software is being used by private sector entities as well, albeit it seems very much aligned with what these government entities and individuals are up to. Talk a little bit about Google and what it's doing to manipulate its users.
Well, this is one of these examples that sounds a little bit silly until you actually think about it. And then you're like, my God, this is terrifying. Now, if you are typing things into Google, Google will actually auto-correct. People understand, it corrects your spelling or something as you go along. It will now auto-correct to replace your language with approved woke language. So if you try to type policeman, it will tell you, it is police person, and it would become much more insidious. So this is not like it could happen one day. It's happening right now under our feet.
Yeah. So this is the context in which we're seeing Elon Musk trying to inject himself into another of the social media giants, Twitter. That drama is still playing out, to be sure. But Sam, I want to come back to something I talked about in that opening commentary. You're a member, as I said, of our Committee on the Present Danger, China. You've been following very closely what the Chinese Communist Party does to use its various instruments of surveillance and data mining and artificial intelligence, essentially to have, 24/7 surveillance, monitoring, whatever you want to call it, of everybody in their society. If the next step in this progression here in the United States, teamed up with vaccine passports or whatever you want to call them, perhaps, is to get thought police engaging in that kind of surveillance of Americans, are we very far from ultimately following in line with the Chinese model more generally to our horrific detriment?
No, in fact, most of the people we're talking about here will tell you that they admire the Chinese and think we should be more like them. And, anybody can turn on their television now and see video of what's going on in Shanghai. Well, that's your future, folks, where you have a government that has drones hovering over top of you, telling you not to breathe so heavily and go back inside, and is literally welding the doors of your apartment building shut. And you have no control and no rights whatsoever. That's the future these people imagine.
And that's now been going on for weeks in Shanghai. It's moving into Beijing. I'm told there's some 400 million Chinese now under one form of this lockdown or another. We can't let that happen here, Sam Faddis, and I know patriots like you will be in the vanguard of resisting this. Thanks for the work you do at Substack. Thanks for your visits with us each week. And Godspeed in mounting the resistance to what these guys have in mind for us. We'll be joining you in that regard. Next up, we'll speak with Joe Bosco a bit more about what's going on in China and what it means for you on the other side of this very short break.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa: Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa: Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and it's a delight to say we are joined by a man I've come to admire greatly for his service to our country, both in the office of the Secretary of Defense, where for a time he was the China desk officer, the duty expert on China, and in the period since he left the government, his very active contributions to the public policy debate about what the Chinese Communist Party is up to and its implications for the rest of us. His name is Joseph Bosco. He is a, well, highly regarded resource for this program and for a lot of other people besides, and we're always delighted to be able to catch up with him. Joe, welcome back to Securing America, sir. I talked in the previous segment with Sam Faddis about something that has developed just this week, namely the Department of Homeland Security announcing that it's going to start essentially policing what it calls disinformation. We touched with Sam about this comprehensive surveillance program that the Chinese Communist Party uses to monitor and restrict and punish speech as part of their social credit system. And I wondered if we might get just your appreciation of how effective that system, that surveillance and artificial intelligence and data mining and the rest of it is in imposing totalitarian control on the people of China, and what it would mean for us, obviously, if it were to be exported here.
Yeah, I know nothing about the whatever the Homeland Security people have announced recently, but in terms of China, there's no doubt how effective their totalitarian system has been in suppressing information and disseminating disinformation and in controlling the not only the activities, but the thinking of the Chinese people. So it's been an extremely insidious process, and it's not new to China. We've seen this in other totalitarian societies, Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union. It's going on to a certain extent in Russia as well. People are being put in jail for disagreeing with Putin's war policy in Ukraine. So totalitarians tend to, the very word means they want total control over their people, and that means how their people not only act, but how they think. And so we've seen this before. This play has been run in the last century and now in this century, and we need to be aware of what's going on there. We need to, of course, combat it in China and Russia by getting the truth, the facts, the information to the people who are being denied it, and that will affect their attitudes and their behavior. And there's no doubt there's a connection between information and conduct.
Yeah. Thought control, as you say, being an instrument of controlling conduct, among other things. And Joe, just a further word on that. When you look at things like this lockdown policy in China and the extreme severity of it, obviously monitoring and, you know, distilling information about what people are thinking, what people are saying, what people are perhaps going to be doing in response, I imagine has to be a priority for the government of China as it's trying to exercise that kind of total dominion over its own people.
Well, it's all of a piece in China. We now have a pandemic. They've got a resurgence of it. So they're using the same totalitarian tools to deal with that they use in everyday life in China.
Right. This is one of the things we don't want to replicate, that's for sure. And I take your point completely about the need to be trying to wage information warfare against the Chinese Communist Party. They certainly wage it against us as part of their, as you know, unrestricted warfare. Joe, you mentioned a moment ago the Russians and their efforts to suppress dissenters in their own society. You had a very interesting piece in The Hill recently about your belief that the Russian experience in Ukraine is actually creating a heightened likelihood that the Chinese Communist Party is going to invade Taiwan. Walk us through your analysis of that, if you would.
Well, my concern is that the way the Biden administration has reacted to the Ukraine invasion is to distinguish between how it would respond to an attack on a NATO country, which Biden has described as a sacred obligation under Article 5, and how they have reacted to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which is we will not send troops in, we will not have a no-fly zone. We're not going to get involved in World War III over Ukraine. It seems to me there's a disconnect between those two statements, because are we going to get into World War III over Lithuania or Latvia? Apparently, yes, we are, because that's what Article 5 says. And yet, for decades, we've been inviting Ukraine to participate in NATO, to join NATO. And now when they're suddenly are in the breach, we are walking away, not literally. I mean, we're providing huge amounts of weapons belatedly and not all the right kinds, but we're doing it and we're mobilizing NATO. But it seems to me we've led Ukraine into a trap. The danger I see with Taiwan is we have the Taiwan Relations Act, which makes various moral and political commitments to Taiwan, but does not state unequivocally that we will come to Taiwan's defense. So what I worry about is, and China has made allusions to use of nuclear weapons, just as Russia has done. So if China attacks Taiwan, will we rush to Taiwan's defense? Or will Biden or some other president say, gee, we can't get into World War III over Taiwan? So this is the analogy that disturbs me. I think we need a much clearer statement of intention to defend Taiwan in the event of Chinese aggression.
Well, we're looking at a situation where some analysts have come away from this saying, well, this has gone so badly for the Russians that the Chinese will be deterred from thinking that they can actually engage in this kind of aggression on their own part against Taiwan or anybody else for that matter. There are some who say that, you know, their real target is us, not Taiwan, though most immediately one presumes that they would go after the Taiwanese first. But Joe, what are your thoughts on the takeaways of the Chinese on these other grounds? I take your point about they may see this as a place where there's not a treaty commitment and therefore they can have free rein. But do you think that their sense of how hard this has proven for the Russians to do a successful takedown of the Ukrainian, opposition, causing them to think twice about undertaking such an attack against Taiwan?
Well, as I mentioned in the article, there are several areas of similarity, but there are also a lot of differences. Ukraine is a vast territory. Taiwan is an island. It has to be, if it's going to be invaded, it has to come across 100 miles of ocean. That in itself presents complications for the Chinese. On the other hand, it's a small place compared to Ukraine, and they could concentrate all their weaponry and assaults on this small area. And in terms of the will to resist and the ability to resist, I don't doubt Taiwan's will to resist, but I worry about their capacity given the fact that they have a training program of 4 months a year in terms of military preparedness. This concerns me. The Ukrainians have been battle hardened. They've been fighting the Russians for decades in Crimea and eastern Ukraine. So their ability to fight off this force is quite demonstrable. Whether Taiwan has the same ability is a different question. And again, it presumes that China has crossed the Taiwan Strait and is physically invading the island. There's a lot that's going to happen between those two events. And the sinking of the Russian flagship in the Black Sea by the Ukrainians should be a warning to Beijing that any fleet that they try to assemble in the Taiwan Strait may likely face the same fate. So it's a complicated picture, and I'm sure Beijing is weighing all these different considerations.
But is there any doubt in your mind that they have as a sort of fixed idea, specifically Xi Jinping, that Taiwan must be brought to heel one way or the other? And if so, is it imperative, as you see it, that we arm Taiwan much more significantly now before such an attack takes place? Very quickly.
Absolutely. We must be prepared. We must be clear in our intention to defend Taiwan. And that's the missing factor in all of this. And it will affect Beijing's calculations. Will the U.S. get involved directly or not? And if the answer would be different in each case in terms of their involvement.
But the kinds of capabilities that we've belatedly been providing to the Ukrainians, especially in the anti-ship area, I suppose, is a lesson as to the kinds of things that we ought to be doing on behalf of Taiwan now, so as to both enhance deterrence and, if God forbid, the Chinese decide to go for it, to assure that they have the capability to defend themselves. Joe Bosco, we are hard out of time. I'm sorry to say we will come back to you with a longer conversation, I hope, in the very near future. In the meantime, thanks for your time and your great work at The Hill and elsewhere. Next up, we'll speak with Reggie Littlejohn about the digital gulag that is headed our way, right after this. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The man enabling millions to immigrate here illegally just unveiled another mortal threat to our country. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas announced that his department is establishing an Orwellian Ministry of Truth called the Disinformation Governance Board. It's not hard to connect the dots on how such an effort to restrict speech will tie into the rest of the Marxist revolutionary wrecking operation the Biden administration is mounting. A new digital gulag is being constructed in which vaccine passports repackaged as smart health cards will provide infrastructure for the surveillance, data weaponization, and control mechanisms the Chinese communists call the social credit system. It will be used to track and punish those deemed guilty of disinformation thought crimes. Learn what we can do about this at our digital gulag webinar on Monday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Register at stopvaxpassports.org. This is Frank Gaffney. We're back, and it's a delight always to be able to say welcome to our next guest. Her name is Reggie Littlejohn, no stranger to this program, thank goodness. Also, a marvelous contributor to, well, the cause of freedom all over the world. She's an international lawyer by training, a brilliant litigator who founded and is the president of an indispensable organization, Women's Rights Without Frontiers. She is a member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, and a partner with me in a great task force on vaccine passports and the need to stop them. And we're going to talk a little bit about an important program coming up shortly. I alluded to it earlier in the program, and I want to make sure that all of you are aware of what we're going to do in it and that you join us in the course of it on Monday. But first, Reggie, welcome, of course, a proper hello. Thank you for joining us, as always.
Oh, thank you for having me again, Frank.
We want to talk first about this issue of a new, well, thought control operation, I think it's fair to call it. Ministry of Truth is how it's being described by fans of Orwell, or at least followers of Orwell. What do you make, Reggie Littlejohn, as somebody who reveres freedom and our Constitution, of this idea that the Department of Homeland Security is going to create a disinformation governance board?
Well, Frank, when I first heard those words, I thought this was satire. I thought that somebody had made this up. It just seems so far beyond anything that the U.S. government would do, and very Orwellian, Ministry of Truth. Obviously, it is true. You can't make this stuff up. And so I hope and I believe that it is unconstitutional. I hope it will be challenged. I hope it will be quashed. We need to stand up against it. And the first, one of the, my first thoughts about it was that in February 7th of 2022, the Department of Homeland Security, same people, put out a National Terrorism Advisory System bulletin that said that would characterize people as domestic terrorists if they were spreading disinformation or misinformation. So it's the same topic, okay, about election integrity, saying that there was election fraud in the 2020 election or COVID, and they didn't specify COVID, but one would assume that they mean that these people are counter-narrative in terms of the need for the vaccine mandates, the mask mandates, the origin of the virus, all the rest of it.
Any sort of thing that could be said to be at odds with the official narratives that they can't figure out where it came from and the vaccines work perfectly and are harmless and, you know, the masks are effective means of restricting, you know, your susceptibility to infection. What you're saying is if you say any of those things are not true, you could be cast, according to the Department of Homeland Security, as a domestic terrorist?
Exactly. And this came out in February. And here's the bulletin. And then they, on page 2 of the bulletin, it says that the way that they are going to enforce this is through evaluation of online activity. And this new announcement from the Department of Homeland Security references this bulletin. So this is what this is what they're coming up with to find people who disagree with the mainstream narrative or the White House's narrative about election integrity, who question maybe there was election fraud, or who in any way challenge the COVID narrative in any of the ways that you specify. And so this is a major attack on free speech.
And we've seen in the course of our previous conversations with Sam Faddis and Joe Bosco in this program, how this can fit into what has been described by you and among others as a digital gulag. And we're going to talk more after a break about specific information that we'll be presenting in a webinar on this subject. But Reggie, you've had an appreciation of the kind of thought control, as well as, well, all other aspects of control that the Chinese Communist Party has instituted with respect to its own people. Talk a little bit about how this would fit into such a program that is now being exported by the Chinese Communists worldwide as a sort of China model for dealing with the disease, most especially.
Well, okay, so this has come straight out of the Chinese Communist Party playbook. And in two ways. Number one, they have a propaganda department. So we're going to have a disinformation governance board where the government decides what's true and what's false. I mean, this is thought police, absolutely. And then there's the enforcement of it, which is also straight out of the Chinese Communist Party playbook. So they've got the social credit system, we've got the disinformation governance board, and also, and we can talk about this later, about the vaccine passport and digital currencies as ways of enforcing this. But I feel like a trap is being laid for us, and you and I and others are doing our best to sound the alarm, but people need to stand up and fight against this before it's too late.
Yeah. And we're not obviously calling for violent fighting. We're talking about resisting what is being done here legally. And you mentioned in the courts, among other places. But the point that I just think is so important, and Reggie, again, your life's work has been on exposing the tyranny of the Chinese Communist Party, notably through what they do to impose population controls on families in China and the devastation that that has caused in the process. But what they've done now with this social credit system is to sort of take that more or less rudimentary one-child policy and the womb police and all the rest of it that goes into enforcing that odious human rights abuse to a whole new level. And what we are about in this webinar, which we'll talk with you more about on the other side of a short break, is trying to make it clear that this is not just somebody else's problem. This is not just what they're doing over there. This is what they and their friends, their fellow Marxists, I would argue, have in mind bringing about in our own country as part of its fundamental transformation. And you're absolutely right, Reggie Littlejohn, that must be resisted. And we're going to talk a little bit about kind of light we're going to shed on how that can be done right after this very short break. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Reggie Littlejohn is in the house virtually, and we're always delighted to be able to say that's the case. Reggie, we've talked about sort of the context of this webinar about what you call a digital gulag, vaccine passports and a cashless society. Introduce this topic of the webinar that will be taking place from 4:30 to 5:45, I believe it is, Eastern Time in the afternoon of the 2nd of May, next Monday, because we really want listeners to this program and supporters of course, your work at Women's Rights Without Frontiers and the Committee on the Present Danger of China, of which you are an important member, to be tuning in to this program. What will they be hearing about and from whom?
So the inspiration of this webinar actually came from a man named Nick Corbishley and an interview that he had on the Epoch Times. And thankfully, he's going to be our first panelist. So I'm very excited about that. But he has a book called Vaccine Passport Scanned, Why Vaccine Passports and Digital IDs Will Mean the End of Privacy and Personal Freedom. We've been talking about this for a long time, but he has done all the research. It's just heavily documented. The whole idea of the vaccine passports, the digital IDs, which are being rolled out nationally as smart health cards. So as everybody's sort of breathing a sigh of relief that we don't, that the vaccine mandates are easing up, the mask mandates are easing up, under the radar screen, there's a movement going on nationally to approve these smart health cards, which do the same thing. They're vaccine passports by a different name. And what they do is they provide a platform to which all the functionality of China's social credit system can be attached within a matter of minutes, according to tech experts.
And when you say that functionality, that's a fancy term for basically pulling in not only your health data, your status as a vaccinated person, when you've been tested and so on, but also all kinds of other information that the Chinese amass and mine and then weaponize against their people. All of that is available to, you know, the government or whomever wishes to compile it in this digital medical card format. Is that what you're saying?
Right. So this is what I'm saying is that right. What they say is, oh, this is just going to be a convenient way to show whether you're vaccinated or not. But it can have everything attached to it that the China social credit system has attached to it, which is facial recognition, real-time geolocation, where you are, your credit cards, your bank account, your social media posts, your internet search history, your internet spending history, your criminal history, your medical history, to come up with a profile of you about whether or not in China you are a committed communist, a reliable communist, and in America, whether or not you are what they would call a domestic terrorist, which, as we discussed in the last segment, would simply mean that you think that there was election fraud in the 2020 election, or that you disagree with the mainstream narrative regarding COVID. So,
or inevitably all kinds of other things that might put you athwart the party line, if I can use that expression, in our own country. And what you've described, Reggie, is that could all happen. All of that data being assembled and marshaled, and as I say, maybe weaponized against you, without your knowledge or permission, I assume. This could be done by a credit card company or the people who manage this the smart card for medical purposes, or of course the government, right?
The Department of Homeland Security, the new Disinformation Governance Board, could look at your profile that's put together through all of these things and decide that you're a domestic terrorist. And so then the first thing that they would do would be, the same thing that China does, which is stop you from traveling, stop you from purchasing. They can cut you off from your credit cards. They can cut you off from your bank accounts and just completely disable you and paralyze you as a human being. And if you put that together with a cashless society, then you are really toast.
Yeah. The programmable currencies that can be used to dictate, you know, what you do with this currency, I guess. Is that right?
Well, yes. So they could decide, you're buying too much, whatever it is, wine. So next time you go to the liquor store, your credit card simply won't work. Okay. Whatever they decide you get, that's, they can control it. Okay. Or the other thing is just simply turning it off so you can't buy anything. And then if we are in a cashless.
As they did with those truckers in Canada.
The truckers in Canada, right? And not just the truckers, but the people who supported them. There was, I read a story about a woman who'd given $50 and, you know, to the truckers, and she was unable to access her bank account or her credit cards. This can happen here. We have the technology to do it.
So Reggie, let me ask you this question. We're going to run out of time here, so I'll be brief, and you must too, if you could. You've spent your professional life monitoring what happens when people are denied freedom, notably in communist China. I think a lot of people listening to this program are still probably convinced this couldn't possibly happen in the United States of America. Speak to that, and particularly what we're likely to be able to demonstrate in the course of this important webinar on Monday, and how they can register to participate in it.
I just feel like the powers that be are just, they are lulling us into complacency with this relaxation on the mask mandates and the vaccine mandates, and people are thinking, oh, things are going in the right direction, and they're using that to put the infrastructure in to install these vaccine passports and cashless society. And then by the time that we figure out that this has happened, it will already be in place, and then there will be no dissent. Because if you try to dissent, it's going to go into the Department of Homeland Security.
And you can be punished, and it can happen here, and you can find out what to do about it, as well as how likely this is, at stopvaxpassports.org. Reggie Littlejohn, thank you so much for joining us. Every time you're bringing really vital information to bear, and we're so appreciative. And I want to thank the rest of you for participating in this edition of Securing America. I hope you feel better equipped to help us in doing just that. There's more information at securingamerica.tv. You can also follow me at Frank Gaffney, and I'm prayerful that if you do all of that, if you stay tuned, as they say, that you will be not only part of the team, but you will also go forth and multiply.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.